Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. FSHD Society Radio Show. Welcome, everybody. Oh, okay. We're live. We're plugged in. We're set to go here on another Wednesday night here in FSHD Society Radio Land. Thanks for being here, joining me in this great event, as we call Facebook Live on FSHD Society Radio. You need to get a hold of me. You can do so. FSHD Radio at FSHDSociety.org. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter. I think we got Instagram out there too. You can also go to just FSHDSociety.org and learn everything about FSHD Society and what we're doing, news, current events, how to get involved, which is always huge, right? Involvement. Big on involvement. And we're going to talk about someone that just did that today. I'll tell you, he stepped up, got involved, created his own foundation, because today's guest is going to be Justin Turftake Van Lett, and that is, I believe, the pronunciation. We'll get it straight from Justin. You know, no worries there, always. But I call him Turf Tank. Justin Turf Tank is going to join us today. He's our featured guest here on the FSHD Society Radio Show. Excited to have him in. A lot of big news on FSHDSociety.org. If you have followed the site, news, things, treatments coming out, a lot of new drugs, I guess, in the working, new treatment possibilities in the working. I want you to all be aware to check it out. Follow FSHD Society on Twitter, Facebook, the sites. A lot of interesting things coming through in this day and age. It's very exciting as treatments are being looked at, worked on. One of the things, too, that is also taking place right now, and it really is a call to you. Those listening now or later on the podcast or via Facebook, this April 21st, the FSHD Society is holding its landmark Voice of the Patient Forum on Drug Development for FSH Muscular Dystrophy. You will be hearing a lot about it over the coming months. This event is in our community. It gives us an opportunity to testify to the FDA on the impact of FSHD on your life and the lives of the loved ones. Your testimony is huge here, and we want you to be a part of it. It is the Voice of the Patient Report that will be submitted to the FDA's Division of Neurology Products Office of New Drugs for inclusion in the framework used to evaluate future FSHD therapies. Your views carry great weight with the agency when it's considered whether to approve a new therapy. So you understand then how important this really is and how we need your involvement. There's just no other way about it. We encourage everyone, patients, family members, and even at every stage of this disease, and even caregivers, people that are in your life that want to share their opinion and have their voice heard. They need to get involved. In the first of our series of surveys to help us prepare, we want people to tell us a little bit about themselves. We want to make sure that we're meeting and showing full diversity when covering the FSHD community. So obviously everything we can do to have you get involved is vital. Right now, you can take your surveys. I've done all five already, and I would love you to follow me on that. And all you have to do is to take this survey. Just go to FSHDSociety.org. Okay, visit our Voice of the Patient Forum page there. Then listen. Let's see, there was a webinar in January. Talked a little bit about it, but all that information is out there on FSHDSociety.org. I would not doubt if that webinar or part of it is already posted on YouTube page. You can register for the live webcast on April 21st. You can register to attend the meeting on April 21st in Hatesville, Maryland. The space is limited, so you might not, you know, get in there. I plan on at least attending the webcast of it on April 21st. So those are the things going on right now that are just absolutely huge. We need people to get their voice heard. It doesn't take any real super grand effort. You know, you don't need a podcast like this to get your voice heard. You don't need to just send emails or those kind of things. We want you to be able to get your voice out there. By right now, all you have to do is go through the survey process. 5 of them are out there. Simple questions, nothing, you know, crazy difficult. It's all very easily done. And that, I think, is my call to get involved today. Where you can go specifically on FSHD Society's page.org's page is Voice of the Patient Forum. It's under the Get Involved button on the FSHDSociety.org page. If you want to chat with me, if you want to know more about it, you can email me if you'd like, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. They're not going to inundate you with garbage emails or something like that. It is basically, we need your input. And don't you want to give it? This is your time to see how this affects you. And your voice will be heard. This is not a cliche that I'm throwing out there. I know that unfortunately, I could not make the volunteer summit at the end of January, but I know this was talked about there. A lot of our volunteers showed up there in force in Chicago at O'Hare, and had a weekend-long fire hose worth of information just thrown at them, I'm sure, as they did to me the first year I went the previous year, and a lot of information, and this was part of that. So if you're part of a chapter, you're probably already receiving emails, possibly, about how you can get involved, or encouraging you to get involved, or it is on, maybe your Facebook feed or something like that. So share it. The more people that get involved, the better that it will be, of course. And that's really what we're trying to do: get involved, which is kind of the theme of our guest that we're going to have, Justin Turf Tank, and that's what I'm going to call him. That's how I call him around my house. He's going to be on the show today, and he is a person that massively just got involved. He started his own foundation. We're going to talk about that when he dials in, and we're going to talk about his FSHD story. So hang tight. He will be on in about 12 after the hour here. We're going to talk with Justin. Really excited to hear his story firsthand and talk about his foundation. The other thing is I also wanted to plug in next month's guest. We're already working ahead, so that would be March, right? First week of March, the first Wednesday of March, I believe that's March 4th, we're going to have Julie Cohen. She is with the genetic testing question and answer that you maybe have seen thrown about on FSHDSociety.org through the Kennedy Krieger Institute. And I saw the questions that were posted that she had on there, and I thought, what a fun guest that could be. So immediately, June Kinoshita reached out to Ms. Cohen, and she's going to be on in March. So look for that as our next guest. Let's see. Let's go to the Facebook forum here. People chatting in, chiming in. Looks like Meredith Hummel, past guest, chapter director out of North Carolina, is there. She says, yes, send it to your loved ones. She's talking about the early mentioned survey. Do that. And then she also said, missed you at the volunteer summit. Yes, Meredith, I missed you as well. Ian is here. He joins us as well. He says, good evening, everyone, and good evening to you. Ah, Justin is actually in on the chat there, too. So everybody say hi to Justin, and he's our featured guest. He's already in the chat room. Colin is here. He will be there, he says, looks like the big event that we were also talking about, the Voice of the Patient Forum. Looks like they're going to be there probably in person, so that's awesome. Awesome. So great. Thank you guys for being here. Thanks for joining in on Facebook Live. If you miss this live show, that's fine. You can find it via the podcast ways, and that is through Spotify and Stitcher and Google Play and Podcast Addict and pretty much anywhere else you can find podcasts. It's out there. Just search FSHD Society or FSHD Society Radio Show. You will find the logo there. Hit play. All the past episodes are on there, and we also have some of the interviews from the telethon we did in December. So those keep getting sprinkled in as we go. We don't want to inundate you with too many of those interviews, kind of feed them slowly to you, and we keep putting those up on as special bonus episodes, if you will. So why don't we take our first break as we're approaching 12 past the hour. We're excited to bring in our featured guest, which will be Justin Turf Tank. He's going to talk about the Turf Tank Foundation and his FSHD story. So hang tight. You're listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. You're listening to FSHD Society Radio. Hi, this is Tim, host of the FSHD Society Radio Show. Check this out. In 2014, a Dutch team reported that aerobic exercise training, cognitive behavioral therapy, decreased fatigue and improved the quality of life significantly for FSHD patients. This suggests a significant positive impact in slowing the degeneration of affected muscles. So no excuses. Get out there. Get active. Get after it. You can do this. We can fight it. Hey, all, welcome back to the FSHD Society Radio Show. So happy to be here on another first Wednesday of the month. It is February 5th, 2020, and so glad I can share some time here this evening with my friends in the FSHD Society world and somebody that I met at Chicagoland FSHD Society meet and greet at the time. I think he lived in Kenosha, my neck of the woods here in Wisconsin. And he's moved since, so that's going to be part of our question and answer with our featured guest as we bring him in. We bring in Justin. I'm just calling you Justin Turf Tank. How are you doing, Justin?
I'm good, Tim. How about yourself?
I am doing fantastic. Friendly voice on the line, I think you have a great story, and I think it's going to inspire some people and probably entertain some people. I think you have a phenomenal personality, and I'm excited to share that with everybody today.
Well, thank you.
So why don't we start off with a little bit about yourself? I love to do that with our guests, so kind of get everybody, you know, invested of, you know, who are they listening to and where's this guy from? So why don't we start there, Justin? Tell us about yourself.
All right. Born and raised in Illinois, little farm kid, grew up on a farm with about 1,500 acres, 600 head of cattle, 400 head of hogs, kept us busy through the time, and eventually worked my ranks up through college and ended up in Chicago for the most part of my stint of life after college, and where eventually my wife and I got married in Chicago. And then once we started to grow our family, we moved a little bit north. And yeah, you're correct. We ended up in Pleasant Prairie, right by Kenosha.
Yes. That's, I think, about the time where I met you, I think, at one of those Chicago little meet and greets. I think that was that was definitely fun to meet you face-to-face there. And it was interesting for me because I was like one of the first people that, you know, that I met with FSHD during that time. And that was, you know, cool within itself, but it was just your personality. You have this, really cool, like laid back way about you. And knowing that a little bit of what you just said about your upbringing, on a farm. What was that like? That sounded like a lot of cattle you guys had to deal with.
You know, it's funny because I look back at it now, and growing up in the farm got me to where I am today, which at that time, you go through lessons with your parents and your grandparents, whoever it may be, and you always might think that they're just giving you a hard time. But now I can really look back at it and see that the lessons and the battles that I had with my grandfather and my dad on the farm were lessons that would only lead me to success here along my life. But now that I look, I wouldn't change anything for it. I know for the longest time, our TV had four channels while all my friends that lived in town, they had cable and everything else. And we didn't get the privy of MTV or Nickelodeon or any of that stuff. So I got a brother that's 2 years older than me. We were basically forced to be outside if we wanted to have any entertainment. So we were outside. We built a baseball field in our pasture, a football field. We did it all to just kind of pass our time. But then in the meantime, we worked a lot on the farm with my grandfather and my dad to obviously raise the cattle and raise the hogs, which eventually created the money to fund our life and eventually help us get to college to only better our life.
You mentioned there that you talked about making, you know, time, a lot of time, it sounds like outside, which is similar to how I grew up too, is get your butt outside. And I never argued with it. That was like the place I wanted to always be. In fact, if I was going to get punished, it was, they took it away. Oh, you got to stay in the house. Oh
yeah.
I hated that.
Yep.
So it sounds like very similar to your upbringing too. And then that leads me to believe, then, would you consider that you were a pretty active kid growing up?
Oh yeah, I was in everything. We had ATVs and just run around doing that, played every sport imaginable, and I excelled at every sport. I was very athletic, playing baseball, football. I didn't play football in high school because I really excelled at golf. I played golf, basketball, ran track. Whatever I could do, I just wanted to do because I enjoyed watching sports. I enjoyed playing sports. And like you said, I just enjoyed being outside. That's why I eventually got in the career field that I did, working on golf courses, because I got to be outside.
You played golf and then you ended up working on a golf course. When did that transition happen? I mean, did you play like golf in high school a lot or on any, you know, team, or did you play more for fun?
Well, I started, my grandparents, the farm that they ran, it was right across the street from a public 9-hole golf course.
Wow.
And nice. we would be there all the time. So my grandparents play golf. So eventually they'd start taking me with them and they'd throw a ball in the fairway and I'd just hack at it and I'd run after and I'd hack at it again. So I was 8 years old at the time and I really enjoyed being out there. I enjoyed playing it. So it got to be somewhat of a family thing to where my parents, my brother picked it up. So we would all go as a family. And then, I think I was 11 years old and we ended up moving into that farmhouse because my grandparents built a house up the street. And I was mowing the lawn the one day and the guy that took care of the golf course came over and he's like, "Hey, you want a summer job?" And I'm like, "Anything to get me off the farm." So I was like, what am I going to do? And he's like, "Well, you're basically going to do what you're doing right now. You're just going to mow grass." So I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
And I said, "Sure, I'll do it." So he gave me 20 hours a week, paid me $5 an hour cash. Hopefully the IRS isn't listening. They don't go looking for these guys. But I was 11 in sixth grade and I'm making $100 a week. And from that point on, I just spent every day on the golf course, whether it was working, whether it was playing. And then eventually when it came time to go to college, I did get some offers to go play golf in school. And I eventually did play some collegiate golf. But when it came time to decide what I wanted to do as a career, I was like, you know, all I know is farming and taking care of a golf course. And I want to do a golf course thing. So that's kind of what set me on my career path. So I eventually got a bachelor's degree in horticulture with a specialization in turf management and just kind of worked my way through the through the industry to where I ultimately hit the kind of the pinnacle of our career as being a, being the head superintendent at a pretty prestigious club on the North Shore of Chicago.
Before you worked at, was that, which course was that? Was that Briarwood? Is that the one or no? Was that a course before?
Briarwood Country Club in Deerfield.
Nice. And prior, did you spend some time Cherry Hills as well?
Yep.
In Denver?
I went out to Denver. I lived in Denver for about a year and a half. I actually took a hiatus from school because I was kind of, I won't say an early life crisis, but I was like, you know, am I really going into the thing that I want to do? And I had a friend that moved to Denver to go to law school at DU. And he called me the one day and he's like, hey, we've got a group of people renting a house downtown Denver. We got a spare bedroom. You want to join us? And I was like, you know what? Why not? So I packed my stuff up. I told my parents I was moving to Denver. They looked at me like, what are you talking about? And I think that was like that. That was the epiphany of my life. That was the move that really set things going, because Cherry Hills is probably, I don't know if they're still rated as the best golf course in Colorado, but as far as country club, it's right up there. And having that on my resume and working for Mike Burke, who was the superintendent there at the time, really set my sights high. And I'm thankful for that experience, and I just continue to push on.
So from that point then at Cherry Hills, you probably realize this is definitely your sweet spot, your wheelhouse type job. You loved it. And you could continue, you know, or see yourself continuing that career.
Yeah, it was the one that at the end of the day, money gives you the ability to do what you want to do with the golf course as far as conditions. Mm-hmm. And I'd only worked at like middle to low end budget golf courses. Mm-hmm. And Cherry Hills was the one that they had a decent budget. They could do what they wanted to do, host tournaments and stuff like that. So I was kind of like, you know what, if I do the right thing in my career path and I get to the right spot, being a avid golfer and understanding the playability of a golf course, I can really do some neat things with a golf course with my experience.
So I know, Justin, you're not just on here just to talk about your awesome golf career as, you know, maybe an awesome player, but also one that can make the courses look phenomenal. But you also have FSHD. Tell us a little bit about what I call your FSHD story. You know, when did that diagnosis kind of rear its, ugly head in your life?
You know, it was kind of a freak thing. And it's funny, the more people you meet and the more you talk to them about their diagnosis and everything else, the sad commonality is the amount of people that have gone to handfuls of doctors before finally figuring out what is causing these problems. And I had just happened to have some issues with my lower back, and I went to physical therapy. And the girl, one of the things she wanted me to do was take two tennis balls and put them flat on the wall and roll them up with my hands. Well, okay. I started to roll the tennis balls up, and I basically got to like eye level and I couldn't go any higher. And she's looking at me like, what's going on here? And I'm like, I don't know. This is all the higher I can go. So then she stood behind me and she had me bring them down and then go back up, and she was watching my shoulders. And she said, okay, this is going to work. But she recommended that I go see an orthopedic because she thinks something was wrong with my shoulders.
Right.
So my wife and I were living in downtown Chicago at the time. So we were really close to Rush Hospital and Midwest Orthopedics. And they're pretty well known for the orthopedics that they have there. So I ended up going in to see a gentleman by the name Dr. Romeo. And after meeting with him, I got an idea of who he was, but literally standing in his office, and at that point I'm 33 years old, and he has me take my shirt off, and I'm standing there, he's telling me to just smile for him. And I'm like, okay, this is odd. Why am I standing here with my shirt off and the doctor's just asking me to smile for him? So we did that a few times, and we did a few things with my arms, and he sits down. And he looks at me and he's like, you know, Justin, he's like, I don't know if this is what you're coming for, but I got a feeling you might have a form of muscular dystrophy. And it's like shell shock. One, like when he says muscular dystrophy,
right
away you think of Jerry Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And the Duchennes and doing his telethon all those years. So he kind of talked about it a little bit with me, and I'm kind of sitting there maybe picking up every third word because my mind's just starting to race. And it's like, okay. And I was like, what's the next steps? And then he recommended I go see a neurologist. And so he gave me a name of a doctor there at Rush, Dr. Barboy. And I had to do an EMG, which was recommended, which I think I've done three of them now. And they're the most awkward feeling things to ever have to go through. And then ultimately do a genetics test to obviously confirm what was going on. So I left the doctor's office and I go out to the car. And what's the first thing you do? You get on the Google machine.
Right.
And you just start Googling. Mm. And the sad thing, and I hate saying it, but the things that come up are always the worst things first. And you start seeing pictures and you start seeing all these things. You're like, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah.
But as I started to read more and more about it, I realized that I could go back to when I was in, I don't know as far as junior high, but getting into high school.
Yeah.
And I remember like when I'd raise my hand to answer a question, I'd have to hold my hand with my other arm.
Right.
And I remember playing basketball the one day with a buddy of mine, and he was going to the community college to be an x-ray technician. And we were playing shirt skins, and he looked at me, he's like, why do your clavicles stick out so far? I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, your collarbones. It's like, you could almost like put your fingers up underneath your clavicles and like lift you up. And so I'm reading all this stuff about FSH. I start thinking, okay, I was showing symptoms back when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some issues in basketball. I separated my shoulder at one point, went to a sports doctor, put it in a sling, did all these things. Then I was going to a sports doctor because I was having some issues with my back, my arms. And they were wondering why when I stood there, my hands were at the front of my legs instead of at the side of my legs. And I'm just like, okay. So I'm just starting to associate all these things that were going on. And then obviously after I saw the neurologist and we did some of the tests, and then I think my ultimate diagnosis through the confirmation with the genetics test came in April of 2013. So it was probably a good 3 months from seeing the orthopedic doctor till I was able to confirm the diagnosis. And then it was kind of, where do we go after there?
What was the reaction from, you know, family, friends, or did you not tell them right away? How did that process go for you?
I'm trying to remember because it was one of those that after I read so much and there's a lot of conflicting information about what's good, what's bad, how people are affected and everything else, and what it came down to is, There's no way to pinpoint. Everybody's affected differently, different muscles, how soon it hits, how long it goes. It's just, there's so many unknowns. So I think that was, I tried to wrap my head around it first, but I definitely went home and sat down with my wife and let her know that this is what was said and this is what we kind of had to look at doing. And then talk to my parents because the other question was, how did I get this? Did it come from my parents or whomever, which eventually down the road, we never did like genetic testing through families to try to pinpoint it because what's that going to do? I guess you could try to establish a bloodline, but it's just, I told them and they were all kind of like, all right, well, let's just be patient. We'll do the testing, see how everything comes out, and then we'll just kind of figure out where to go from there.
Mm-hmm. Was the reaction and I'm going to kind of speak from a little bit of my own experience here with this question, is that I know that when I had the official diagnosis process happening, and like you mentioned, it was kind of like over months of time and evaluating your past a little bit and connecting some of the dots. And I know my wife looked at me and went, "That's why you put your jacket on weird." You know, I was like, "What?
Hey,
yeah, you need like 3 blocks of clearance to put your, to get your arms going." I'm like, "Really?" You know, I just never noticed it. So with, you mentioned you were married and you guys were living in Chicago at the time. And what was your wife's reaction? Because I always feel that that's interesting, important. I mean, you know, she's right in the front lines with you.
Yeah, I think she, the nice thing about my wife, she's so supportive. She's, I won't say she's really kind of, you can't really say it's judgmental, but kind of like judging everything you do.
Yeah.
She was the one that kind of took more of the common ground on it and said, "Okay, we'll work this out. We'll figure it out." But she didn't really like bring up anything like you said with your wife.
Yeah.
But after she kind of learned about things, she kind of could start like what I was doing, associating the way that I did some things with how the disease has affected my body. It's like, I just, as you're telling the jacket thing, I'm thinking about when I drink out of a bottle or a can,
yeah,
I have to tip my head.
Oh yeah.
Because I can't raise my arm.
Right. Right. Right.
So, little things like that. Yeah. It's like, you start thinking about, you're like, what the heck?
Yeah. And to me, you know, I do these things and I don't even realize it, you know, keeping my elbow planted on the table as I drink, you know,
yeah,
and then I kind of bring my head to it. I'm almost doing it now on Facebook Live in front of people like this, you know? So yeah, but that's all about adjustment. And that, to me, that's my normal. So like, what else am I supposed to do? Drop my can of soda? You know what I mean? Like, and I'm thirsty.
Exactly.
So I'm going to figure out how to get the two things together. But it does connect some dots, or even a lot of dots, for people. And I think that in lies, I don't know if you want to use the term blessing, but it answers, you know, and answers are always important. And kind of figure out, oh, that's why it's like this, or that's why it's like that. Now, I don't know about you either, but I kind of had the doom and gloom, you know, diagnosis of no treatment, no cure. I didn't even get a pamphlet. My doctor at the time at least wrote a paper about it, so he was a little ahead of the curve than others, where I felt like, okay, he at least is knowledgeable of what this is, but there wasn't really much more to offer. So was that something similar for you then at that point?
Yeah, there's like even Dr. Romeo, who I only saw him for the one visit, and then after finding out that he was a pretty, he did, I think, a scapular fusion to our friend Ramsey.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was the one that did his operation. But I may be mistaken. I apologize if I had, but I think that it was him. But even dealing with my first neurologist, he knew some stuff, but as far as like really giving me, I won't say pointers, but any information that may help, it wasn't there. I was still doing research online, and then I was fortunate that I think it was the first FSH Chicagoland meeting at Lake Forest Hospital. I met Dr. Truth Nagar, and she was actually the doctor for Dave Lucas, who heads up the Chicago chapter. And so I listened to her talk, and after we got done, I went up and I asked her if she was accepting new patients, and she said absolutely. So I ended up getting in to see her, and she's been a godsend. She definitely is one that kind of stays ahead of things and is always trying to look out for you and what we need to keep pushing forward and what we feel we need to succeed. So I was fortunate to find her, and at that time too, I think there is some information out there from the FSH Society, which I definitely read. I signed up for their newsletter and everything else, so I started to get some of that. But it was a good see, I was diagnosed when I was 33, so that was 2013, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it was a good couple years before I really kind of got out of my, I would say, like a depressive funk.
Yeah.
Of like, how did this happen to me? Why me? Right. I was always so athletic. What's this? And you're thinking about what this is going to take away from you and everything else. And that's kind of what kind of opened my eyes a little bit was when I finally looked at my wife and at that point, the MDA was big in Chicago and they did their muscle walk. So I looked at my wife and I'm like, you know, I think this is something I'd like to do.
Yeah.
So that was kind of what kicked off the next chapter of having FSH for me was doing that muscle walk.
And what was that? What was that walk like to be a part of that? That very first time.
It was a big eye opener to me because I came to the realization, and it's terrible that it took something like this for it to happen, that I wasn't alone. I had the support of so many people that we obviously with the walk, they want you to gain donations. And this is our first year doing it. I think we raised just shy of $11,000, between myself, my wife, and my parents.
Wow.
And that was kind of like one, it's like, holy cow. So I have all these friends and family that are here to help me out, whether it's emotional support, whether it's just friendship, and look at all this monetary donations that they've given for to help me. And then it was even to where the MBA called me and they said, Justin, we'd really like to have you talk in front of our group because you were not only the biggest money raiser for the event, but this is the first year you've ever done it. And we want to recognize you for that accomplishment. So at that point we had our first daughter. She would have been 6 months old, no, 8 months old at the walk. So I walk up on stage and I'm carrying her and even having a kid was kind of it was a talking point within our family because obviously, you know, this can be passed on.
Mm-hmm.
But walking up there with her and I stood there and I looked out and there's probably 1500 people,
wow,
the size of my town I grew up on standing out there. And that I broke down. I was emotional because I looked out there and I'm like, wow. So I'm not alone. I have all these people here to support not only me, but all these other people that are here that are affected. And I met kids that have Duchenne's. I met kids that spina bifida, stuff like that. And I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but what I have is way more manageable than what some of these young kids are affected with. And I felt at that point, I felt terrible that here I was kind of being a Debbie Downer for something that I've had that's been manageable for, at that point, I was 36. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking around and I'm like, some of these kids, they're never going to get to play football. They're never going to get to play. It's just like, okay, well, like, shake the cobwebs out and then let's push forward and let's see what else we can do. And then that took us into the year two of the NBA walk. And then it kind of then started to lead into the development of the Turf Tank Foundation.
We're talking here with Justin Turf Tank. I'm just calling you Justin Turf Tank, by the way. And he's with the Turf Tank Foundation. And that's kind of where you're leading in now for those that might be just tuning in right now. So it sounds like you had some great success with the MDA. And I know you still have a connection with the MDA, which is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You have grown connections with the FSHD Society. But yeah, you also have your own foundation. So since you've segued there perfectly, tell us more about that.
Well, after doing a few of the NBA walks. I went down and I had a meeting with the girls at the NBA office in Chicago, and Amanda and all the girls there have been awesome to us and our family. Like you said, I've developed a good relationship with them. And so I just went down and I sat with them and I'm like, what is it that we can do more? Is there other things that we can do? And at that point, I started thinking with working on a golf course, playing golf, and knowing all these people that on Mondays in the summer, they go play in all these golf outings or charity, whatever it may be, to raise funds. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I really started to work around trying to figure out a way to do a golf outing or golf event. And then I was like, okay, how can we do this even further? And it happened to be where I had to have back surgery in February of 2018. I had two herniated discs that had just gotten really bad, and I could hardly function. And so I ended up going in for a double laminectomy and whatever. And
wow.
I was laid up and I'm like, you know what? This is the time. So I got out my laptop and I laid in bed and I started researching, starting a nonprofit 501c3 and started working towards it at that point. And I figured, okay, the first thing I got to do is come up with a name. And my being in turf and my nickname was Tank from when I was, heck, I think my dad gave me the nickname when I started to crawl because I was a chuggy kid. And I say chuggy because that's what we call our youngest because she's pretty round. But I was a pretty big boy and I was crawling over my brother when he was laying on the floor. So my dad just started calling me Tank. And so that's how Turf Tank came to nice. With being in grass. And and then I started working on a logo and then started filing the paperwork, and I worked through, it was actually an online lawyer company, Rocket Lawyer. So there's a plug for them, but they really did a lot of the legwork as far as the paperwork and filing and stuff like that, to get everything established. And then gratefully last April or May, I think we ended up getting granted 501c3 status through the IRS. So now all contributions can be tax deductible. But the whole thought with doing the foundation was then that gives an area that when we do finally, and my goal is to this summer get the golf tournament going or golf event, is then we can run it through the foundation. And I talked with Beth at the Chicagoland walk. And sorry, Beth, I haven't gotten a hold of you with all the moving and everything that we've been doing. But and then the girls down at the MBTA to try to do this as a group effort, because everybody's been so supportive of me and the family. And I just wanted to figure out ways to do so much more, because after talking with or hearing Mark speak in Chicago about what it takes to get things to the next level and how many things kind of fizzle out because they don't either have the funds or they don't have the support. So it's just like, what can we do? And the foundation was kind of an outlet for us to kind of just start building off of that then.
Yeah, it kind of turns it into, it kind of turned that situation into a positive focus. I know that I totally get when you said earlier about kind of getting in that blue state of mind or, you know, a little down. And obviously being at that first MDA walk kind of, or the second one, I believe you said, where you had to speak and it kind of shook you a little more from the cobwebs. And but I think it is, I mean, it is important that people know it's like you're going to have like a mourning, you know, period. Allow yourself that to some degree, but you're right, you got to shake it free, whatever that is. And I think sometimes it is something great like creating a foundation. You know, for me, it's I get my mind redirected, either who's going to be next on the podcast and what am I going to work on in there. What am I going to do with my baseball teams that I coach? And I funnel my energy in those directions and things that I enjoy. And then the FSHD thing doesn't seem like it's such a looming, terrible, you know, thing to deal with at this point, because these things are good. So it's awesome that you just took that energy and went, hey, I'm focusing it on there. Not to mention you're doing it when you're laying in bed after surgery. I mean, that's just phenomenal. You are a man that does not stop. I think your nickname is spot on. You are a tank. Just roll it over. Just keep going. That's just awesome. I think that in itself is just a great lesson for those, you know, listening that, man, you know, he created a foundation laying in bed after surgery. Maybe I can do something. It's like, that's pretty inspirational, Justin.
Yeah, it was something I'd thought about for a while. And then it's just, again, it's just finally taking the time or finding the time to do it. And the way that my job was, my time was limited, and then having a young kid and trying to catch up on time with her. And then finally, it was unfortunate that passing away in bed after having back surgery was the catalyst to create a nonprofit. But you know, it needed to be done, and I'm glad I got it done. And I look forward to now spending more time with it, since I will have a lot more time.
Yeah. What are you doing now? I know I do follow you a little bit on Facebook and what you post. So I know you're no longer living in Pleasant Prairie here in Wisconsin. You've vacated the north. So good for you. And can you tease where you've moved on to?
We've moved south. We're actually in the Fayetteville, Arkansas area now.
Nice. Excellent.
It was something that with my job and dealing with the agony, I guess, or the struggle that we can face with FSH, it was getting to be too much.
Yeah.
This past June, I was just mentally and physically just exhausted. And obviously with running a golf course, the way the spring was, with how wet things were, we had a big project going on that we finally got the project done in the middle of June, when it was supposed to be done the first week in May, just because of the weather. I was done. I started seeing a mental health therapist, and we just started talking through some things. And it came down to where an important decision needed to be made. It was either my time was going to be dedicated to the golf course solely, or I was going to be an active participant in my family, and raising my kids and getting to see my kids more. So at that point, Aaron and I, we kind of made the decision that we would be open to other opportunities. And thankfully for her, she is just killing it in her career. Mm-hmm. And an opportunity opened up for her, that we investigated. And at that point too, while that was going on, I went and I saw Dr. Nagar again, and she just kind of looked at me. She's like, Justin, you got to take some time. She's like, you got to take a break. So I ended up making the decision to resign from my position of director of agronomy at Briarwood. And Aaron ended up then accepting a role down here, and we packed up, and literally we've been here now. I've been here for 10 days. the movers were just here 6 days ago, unpacked a semi-load of stuff.
That's awesome.
And, slowly but surely kind of making it home down here. I will be honest, I'm mad at myself that I didn't load up a bunch of spotted cow before I drove down here, but hey, I'm sure I'll visit again. But yeah, so we're down here in Arkansas now, and I'm just kind of taking some time to focus on myself mentally, myself physically, and then get some time back with our 4-year-old daughter, Rourke, and our 1.5-year-old daughter, Rainer, because I missed a lot of that time because my work requirements were pretty high. And as I explained to somebody when they were asking me what goes on with the degenerative muscle disease and how that affects work, I kind of use the analogy, take your cell phone and you have your Wi-Fi running, you have your Bluetooth on, location services that are all pulling juice.
Yeah.
And here, as I'm driving to work and I'm holding my arms up, my shoulders are getting tired. And I was getting like to noon, I'd be up at 3:34 in the morning, and I'd be at the office by 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And by 11:30, I'm like trying to put my cell phone back on the charger to get like 5% more to get me to 3 o'clock. And then eventually get home at the end of the day. And you hope that once you lay down and you get some sleep that you're fully charged. But for me, I don't sleep the best because when I move and turn, it's painful. And then I've got the dog over in the corner licking itself and my wife snoring. So you're between those. And I could never get fully recharged. So then you string 4 or 5 days in a row of my job working 12 to 14 hours a day, and I'd get to the weekend and I'd just be, I would be done. I would need like 2 days to recover, but I could never get it.
Wow.
And I was missing out with the kids and everything else. I'd maybe see them 18 hours a week in the summer, if that. So it was just, it was a life choice that needed to be made. And as much as I loved what I did and I loved being on the golf course, it was just an important time in my life for my health, but also for our family to make sure we stay solid and the kids recognize me as an active participant in their childhood.
Mm-hmm. Hugely important. Yeah, it sounded like, you made some great life-changing, shifting decisions. I'd imagine it's all going to work out, and I love how you painted the picture of that life and why you made it the change, you know, or why you needed the change.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult. I mean, I can't imagine doing that kind of work with what we have. I mean, I do, I'm walking down the same or similar road, just I don't put as many hours in. But yeah, I mean, I work at a kitchen and bathroom modeling place, so I'm chucking around toilets and iron tubs and stuff. And after a while, I'm like, yeah, maybe this is probably not going to work out really well for a while here. I got to maybe think of something else to do. So yeah, I totally... Yep. Totally get it. And you are doing a lot more than even what I'm tackling. So kudos to you for making that decision and for so many of the right reasons. That's huge. What would last question before we let you go, Justin, what would be some advice you would give somebody that might be listening now or on the podcast, you know, replay later, that they recently just got diagnosed? What advice would you give that person?
Oh man, that's a tough question because everybody's going to handle it in their own manner.
Right.
I think the nice thing is now is from what I can see, and maybe it's just because I've become more active, I don't know, but it seems like there's more sources out there. More information. I think the FSH Society, as I've watched them develop over the last 3 to 5 years, it's completely, I feel it's, they're on a completely different level than what they were 6 years ago when I was diagnosed. Now with doing the chapters, I think that initiative is huge. I think it's so cool to see all the chapters that have been popping up. And I actually reached out to Jim Chin, who I see frequently. He's running one, I think, over in Tulsa. So I think I'm going to try to go over that way here eventually because it's about an hour and a half away. But I would say take your time, deal with what you feel you need to deal with in your mind. But don't close yourself off. Talk to people. I remember one of my good friends when I was told I had it, I called him and I just started to cry.
Right.
And he's just like, what's going on? And I told him and he's like, hey, no matter what, we're always here for you. So realize that you have a support system that you may not realize you have, but they're there. You just have to maybe go out and just be honest with them on where you're at. And they'll help you through every situation imaginable.
Awesome advice. Where can people find more out about the Turf Tank Foundation, Justin?
www.theturftankfoundation.org.
Love it. Beautiful.
That's our website. We got a Facebook page too. And again, it's I've kind of been running this thing all on my own with help, with a little help from my wife and some friends and family. But like I said, I'm looking forward to, once we get settled in down here, I'm going to really put forth my effort to try to get this golf tournament off the ground this upcoming summer. Mm-hmm. And just try to do some other initiatives that can benefit people, not only with FSH, but also with other MDs, because sure. It's when I had my conversation with the girls at the Muscular Dystrophy Association, we talked about the allocation of funds and where stuff goes and everything. And the one researcher I talked to that they work with made a really good point to me. He said, you know, Justin, he's like, I get that you being affected with FSH, you want all your money to go directly to that. But he's like, you know, you never know that we might be working on research for something else and just stumble across something that is like a golden ticket for FSH.
Right.
So he's like, don't get too narrow-minded on your efforts. But he's like, I completely understand where you're at. But he's like, don't forget that some of the research on these other ones could very well be a pathway to a treatment or a cure for what you have.
Right.
I was like, that's a good thought.
A good way.
So
that's
why I want to try to keep this a triangular thing with the Turf Tank Foundation, the FSH Society, and the MDA, and we'll get this thing off the ground and then see what else we can do down the road.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that we all got to go to the website, theturftankfoundation.org. Follow that on Facebook, folks. I don't know about anybody else. I mean, I am a kind of a golfer, kind of. So I'm so interested in this. So in this great event that you're thinking about doing in the summer. And so we want to follow that path and all the good things that you're doing there with your foundation. Thanks a lot, Justin, for being here today, taking the time out, chatting with us for a while. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim, for doing this podcast. I don't get on all the time, but it's neat to get on and listen to people's stories and listen to the doctors that are leading the charge, and the fact that we just have the news that comes out that we got orphan status on the Homospit pod. So we're heading in a phenomenal direction. And I think that goal of the FSH Society, that I think we're on point, and fingers crossed that I'm always one to push the envelope, but maybe even sooner.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that. Those that don't know that orphan class, if you want to call it that, for the drug is in the works right now. So that's huge news. You're right. It's an exciting time in research in this disease for sure. There's a lot of exciting things happening. And I think that has a lot to do with also the fact that, you know, people such as yourself, you know, creating foundations and funding and pushing the boulder, right, in the right direction. So it's awesome.
Yep.
All right, Justin, you take care. Sleep tight. Don't let your wife snore and the dog bother you anymore. All right.
I'll do my best. By the way, I love the mute mask.
Oh, baby. Yes. You got up there. Thank you. Fine. You're the first one that's mentioned that. That's the best. Thank you.
And I don't mean to get off tangent, but they're one of my wife and I's favorite bands we've ever seen.
Absolutely.
We saw them. They opened up for 30 Seconds to Mars.
Oh my God.
And we walked in like towards like the last part of their set, and Darren's like standing on the drum, just beating the bass drum from the front. And so every time they were in Chicago, we went to see them.
Absolutely.
So,
I knew I liked you, brother. I knew it. All right. So take care.
All right, Tim. Bye-bye. All the best. And thank you.
Oh, that's Justin. I'm just calling him Justin Turf Tank, one of the best nicknames I've ever heard in my life. I love the explanation. I know that Meredith Hummel was like, thanks for finally saying where the Turf Tank nickname came from. Yeah. Oh, love it. What Justin mentioned there at the end, you know, I have a lot of my personality in this little studio of mine. This studio, for my little quick back history, is from a past podcast I used to do. and it was very entertainment driven, and I had musicians in, and I had even psychics and all these crazy guests and on the phone, and some of them were even in studio, and we just had a blast. We did it for about 7 years, and it was on web radio too as well, and it was syndicated in Ohio a little bit, and we just had a lot of fun, and it ran for about 7 years, and it ran its course, naturally kind of faded away, as did a lot of those little web radio stations. But the studio remained as a relic in my little home, and it wasn't until I kind of revived it to do this podcast, because after my diagnosis, I felt compelled to do something. And when I stared at this equipment down here, and I knew I had the juice to do it, and I wanted to get back into it, but I wanted it to be something with more purpose, something not just selfishly for entertainment only, but to unify people. Obviously FSHD Society was all in too. And for me, the mute math, sign there, the terrible towel, some Packers stuff, sports things, that's kind of all what has remained. And some things have been added, as we even have grown this show too. But, if you got anything you want to send me and add to the, studio backdrop, please do. That'd be fun. You email me fshdradio@fshdsociety.org, and we can put it up as a little token of your personality, if you'd like, and kind of add to the studio. But awesome that he loves a band that I love as well. Justin Turf Tank, you want to know more about his foundation, the turftankfoundation.org. I've been on it several times. I've donated as well to his foundation. He does send you some cool swag. I got a nice winter hat and a cool sticker that resides on the back of my van as I drive around and market that. I do get questions of what that is, and I'm happy to tell people what that is, what that Turf Tank logo is about, what the foundation is about. So please donate, help a friend, help someone in the society, help all of us, and kind of just direct that way, and you get some cool swag on top of it, some Turf Tank Foundation swag. So yeah, it's kind of my two cents, more or less. I wanted to cover a couple of things really quick before we bid you all farewell for the evening. Going over a little bit of news and what's coming up in the FSHD Society. Obviously, the big thing is the orphan drug designation. That was big news. Lansipan or something like that, I think it's pronounced. You can look it all up at fshdsociety.org. That's huge news. As we further mentioned in the monologue piece in the beginning of the podcast, we were talking about the Voice of the Patient Forum. There's the five-part survey that's out there right now. I've done mine. Do yours. Spread it. Share it. Let people know. Big dates to keep in mind is the live webcast on April 21st of that event. You can also register to attend the meeting on April 21st in Hyattsville, Maryland. Space is limited. And it says take all five of our pre-meeting surveys. Those are all available right now. That's huge news. And I need you to know that you can help out. Other things going on. February 6th, the Connecticut Connections, 7 to 8:30 p.m. I believe they do that all virtually through Zoom. You want to know more, go to ctchapter@fshdsociety.org. That's the email address for that one. February 8th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., join our new South Carolina chapter director, Frank Hanley, to celebrate the launch of this new FSHD Society chapter. As mentioned, February 8th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. The email there is southcarolinachapter@fshdsociety.org. That sounds like awesome time there. It's going to be at the Socosti Library in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Log on there for more information. February 8th, 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Mark your calendars for the first chapter meeting of 2020, North Carolina chapter meeting. We have the director there, right? Meredith Hummel. If you want to know more, go to NC Chapter. Email them at ncchapter@fshdsociety.org. Wow, a lot of information. I'm all jacked up, stumbling over my words. February 8th, 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Join us in the next Colorado chapter meeting. A lot of going on. Scott Rydell with Creative Technology will attend to present orthotic and other mobility devices and options. Join them for that. Colorado chapter at fshdsociety.org is their email. February 15th. Man, a lot going on. This is awesome. 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Mark your calendars for also another first chapter meeting of 2020. Brainstorming about our future. A box lunch will be provided. Where is all this? At the Pacific Northwest chapter meeting is where. You want to email them for more information? PacificNWChapter@FSHDSociety.org. February 22nd, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Join us at the Avity Biosciences as this is with the San Diego chapter director. That's Amy. I think she was also chimed in here tonight on this show. Find out more information, San Diego chapter at FSHDSociety.org is their email. What do we got? We got a couple more things on the 29th of February to finish it up. The Greater Philadelphia chapter is having their conference. They're going to talk about Voice of the Patient meeting, as we have been talking about, biannual FSHD Connect conference, also in Washington. They will talk about many other things. Email Philadelphia chapter at FSHDSociety.org. As mentioned, also on the 29th of February, there is going to be a great meeting. Oh, let's see here. The Austin FSHD community meeting. Sorry. You can email for more information there at FSHCommunity@FSHDSociety.org. That's going to be at the Austin Public Library, Sebia branch on Pleasant Valley Road in Austin, Texas. So, yeah, President CEO looks like Mark Sohn will be there as well, as I read my copy too slow to keep up. Thank you all for being here. So much going on. My goodness. I mean, they call that in the biz copy. That's a lot of copy I just read of all the great things going on. If you didn't catch it all, don't worry. There's this thing called the web, and at FSHDSociety.org has it all for you. I want to see you there clicking, logging on, getting connected with a chapter near you. Maybe perhaps, taking your survey, the 5-part survey, get involved with that. All these things for you. Follow FSHD Society on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Email me, FSHDRadio@FSHDRadioHost.com. Or .org, excuse me. Also, if you want to follow me, you can do that too. You can just follow me on Twitter. My handle there personally is FSH Radio Host, if you want to follow me there. So that's at FSH Radio Host. I know some people in the past have asked to kind of get in contact with me. I take direct messages that way as well. Happy to hear from you. Come back next month as we have some conversations with Julie Cohen, who has done the genetic testing Q&A that you'll find at FSHD Society website. I read the article in the Q&A, and I was totally intrigued and had to have her on, so we booked her for March. Come back, join us for that. Get your Q&As ready for her as well. Thank you all for being here. It's been another fun time. We've run over a little bit. Hope you don't mind. I know I don't. I love being here, and I will look forward to seeing you again next month. Be well. Take care. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show.